We're getting close to finishing this wonderful section of the Bhagavatam. Canto 10, Chapter 35. We're beginning this morning from texts 24, 25. Again, these are all in pairs. And we read the verse yesterday. Krishna's just about coming out of the forest, and the gopis are really happy. He hasn't come out, but they're speaking as if he's come out. That's what I understand. The translation reads, as Krishna respectfully greets his well-wishing friends, which includes the gopis, his eyes roll slightly as if from intoxication. He's a little boy, so he's not, it's intoxication of love, as if in the worldly sense, but in the spiritual sense. He wears a flower garland, and the beauty of his soft cheeks is accentuated by the brilliance of his golden earrings and the whiteness of his face. We'll find out why his face is being described like that, which has the color of a Bhadara berry. With his cheerful face resembling the moon, Lord of the night, the Lord of the Yadus, we'll find out about Lord of the Yadus because he's in Braja, moves with the grace of a regal elephant. Thus he returns in the evening, delivering the cows of Braja from the heat of the day. And the short purport, BBT, the word gavam is constructed from the Sanskrit word go, which means cow or senses. Thus, Sri Krishna, by coming back to the village of Braja, relieved the inhabitants of Vrindavan from the distress their eyes and other senses felt during the day because of being separated from direct contact with him. And then there's all this yeah, but stuff. Although they weren't in direct contact, they're seeing him. So what's the difference? Like this whole discussion in Brihat Bhagavatamrita of the personalities in Tapaloka saying, what are you looking for Madan Gopal for? We see him all the time in our meditation. It's not the same. It's the same, but it's not the same. Or someone was asking, Prabhupada was with Krishna all the time. He said it several times, I'm always in Vrindavan. So why did he go to Vrindavan? He's always in Vrindavan. So there's the transcendental seeing and there's the direct seeing. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur writes, quote, though he has arrived at the edge of the town, hear why he is slightly delayed, unquote. Paragraph. His eyes are mad, mudda, rolling about due to the bliss of seeing his father and other loved ones, or due to love generated from seeing the gopis. The first meaning is for those in Vatsalya Rasa, and the second meaning is for those in Madhurya Rasa. This will be understood later. Paragraph. He is giving some acknowledgement of respect by nodding his head, since, though a prince, he was still young and not obliged to strictly follow the etiquette according to scriptural rules. He gives respect to those dear ones, Sva, Suhridam, offering blessings, the priests, elders, brothers, servants, and tambula makers. This is the reason for his delay. Paragraph Sva Suhridam also indicates his beloved gopis. Krishna gives respect to those gopis worshipping him with smiling blue lotus glances from the rooftops by his own glances unseen by others, signifying that he would fulfill their desires. Paragraph. His face was slightly flushed. No, flush for us may mean become reddish in face, but his, it became white. His face was slightly flushed like a ripe baduri fruit due to thirst, hunger, and fatigue from wandering in the forest, or his face was flushed due to experiencing prolonged separation from his dear gopis. Paragraph. His tender cheeks were decorated with the glint from his golden earrings. Krishna is addressed as the Lord of the Yadus, which here means the Lord of the Gopas. The reason has been explained previously. See Canto 10, Chapter 5, Text 20. So here's what Text 5, Chapter 5, Text 20 says in the commentary. King Devamida of the Yadu clan, Yadavas, had two wives, one of a Kshatriya family, the other of a Vaishya family. Through the Kshatriya wife, he bore a son named Shurasena. And through the Vaishya wife, he bore a son named Parjanya. Shura had a son, he had a number of sons, but one of his sons was Vasudev, a Kshatriya. And Parjanya had a son named Nanda, a cowherd or Vaishya. Thus, Vasudeva and Nanda were cousin brothers with the same grandfather. His grandfather's name is Devamida. Devamida, their grandfather, is Yadava. And so, although he's in Vraja, the son of Nanda, he's the head of the Yadu clan. Nanda, therefore, was a Yadava. In Skanda Purana, Krishna says, I lifted Govardhan for the benefit of the Yadavas, meaning Nanda and the others. Then another reference, we'll hear it shortly. Krishna told his brother Baladev, among all the Yadavas, that's those who live in Mathura and Braja, you are the most dear. Paragraph. He walks slowly, like the king of the elephants. With a happy face, he approached nearer, cooling the eyes of the inhabitants of Braja, which had become hot due to separation during the day. Jiva Goswami writes, his eyes roll slightly with intoxication. The word ishat, or slightly, is used to indicate that Krishna is actually Vishuddha Sattva, not affected by material intoxication. His eyes roll from intoxication, mada, a transformation of joy in his heart. So he has bodily transformations also, although he has a spiritual body. But so do the Brijvasis. Spiritualized. This is his natural symptom, and also the special symptom of Navayovana. In this case, it arises from seeing the gopis. The members of the assembly appreciate the many words with various shades of meaning according to their own desires. Thus, there is no fault of mixing contradictory rasas. In other words, it's subjective. Their subjective experience, according to the rasa, they're hearing the words this way, that way, the other way, and there's no contradiction by conflicting rasas. His eyes roll a little, but in various ways. Ve gurnita. This indicates the playful nature of his eyes. He gives respect to his friends and relatives who have come when he arrives in Braja by obeisances, embraces, conversations with smiles, affectionate glances, joking glances, and merciful glances. He wears a kunda garland that reaches his feet. Later it says jasmine garland. I guess kunda is jasmine. Anybody know? No. Down to his feet. He has tender, mridu, cheeks. Tender beauty is the natural quality of Kishora age. Then comes all this. His aging was different than a normal person growing up. Well, here. He has natural beauty because of the combination of the earrings with his cheeks. But the beauty is enhanced by his elephant-like gait, by his slow movements, the earrings move to and fro. This creates special beauty on his cheeks. Paragraph. He is master of the people of Vraja, Yadu Pati. It is said in the Skanda Purana, quote, when Krishna lifted Govardhan, he protected the Yadavas from the reign of Indra. Yadu Pati, he protected the Yadavas. It is mentioned in Harivamsa that Balaram also spoke to the gopis when he came from Dwarka. Right? Balaram went. He tried to convince Krishna to go, and Krishna wouldn't go. So he went to pacify the residents of Braja. So he said, now earlier it was said, Krishna said to Balaram, but he said, among the Yadus, or people of Braja, you gopis are dearest to me. Thus, Krishna is lord of the cowherds, Yadu, the object of the highest prema for Gokula, being its supreme shelter. Krishna is the supreme shelter for Gokula, and thus he's the highest prema. Krishna with a happy face relieves the cows of suffering and comes close. The cows feel suffering because of coming from far off with no rest, because of worrying about Krishna's discomfort, and because of separation from him. He relieves them of distress and also gives them the highest bliss. Sridhar Swami says that Vraja Gavam, the cows and Vraja, also indicates the gopis. It says this again later. Krishna relieves the suffering of the cows, interesting, the carts, and places, Gavam of Vraja, and its people, including the gopis. Or he relieves the suffering of the eyes. Gavam can mean eye, according to the Nanartha Varga. Now, earlier in this same chapter 35, when Krishna enters Vrindavan Forest, we hear the effect that his flute has on different entities. It's a couple of times it's mentioned, even the inanimate objects. the inanimate objects, the explanation is given. They're also conscious, not like the table over there is not conscious, but they're in Shanta Rasa. And the sound of Krishna's flute elevates the Shanta Rasa to another rasa, to an ecstatic experience, the sound of Krishna's flute. So here it's speaking of the carts. That's an inanimate object. But the carts become ecstatic seeing Krishna or hearing his flute or whatever. Paragraph. His face is pale like a badari fruit. According to the gopis bhava, they discern that he also suffers separation from them. But if one disregards his inner feelings, one could say that he was pale because of fatigue. Like the moon rising in the evening, he appears in Vraja in the evening. Thus, the pairs of verses recited by the gopis have been completed. So we're winding up the chapter. Almost. Sanatan Goswami writes, his eyes roll slightly from joy or intoxication. That is natural for him, but particularly because of seeing the gopis. They roll with variety, vigorna. This indicates the beauty of his eyes. He offers respect to the feet of his mother and father, or he personally acknowledges the gopis by glancing everywhere and rolling his eyes, or he breaks the pride of the gopis by not returning quickly because of playing for a long time with the cowherd boys. He wears a jasmine garland extending to his feet to give joy to the cowherds and cows. His cheeks are soft, without whiskers, since he is of Kaishora age, which would seem to imply later he has whiskers. Anyway, doesn't say that either. He decorates his tender cheeks with earrings. Naturally, the earrings and his cheeks combine, but because the earrings sway slowly when he walks, they touch his cheeks. As the Lord of the Yadus, the Yadus gave mercy to the people of Vraja. The Yadus gave mercy to the people of Vraja by having him stay there. Or, Yadupati can mean Lord of the Cowherds. This is stated in Skanda Purana. We read it. He is the Lord of the Cowherds by manifesting great qualities. He appeared in their family for this purpose. Paragraph. He has a joyful face with smiles and glances. This indicates that special bhava has arisen in him. He frees the cows of their continual suffering. He wears a garland of flowers and leaves. This indicates his great beauty in forest dress. It is understood that he has a peacock feather on his head and wears earrings. As well, he wears a long gunja necklace, as described previously. He has given up his previous dress and now wears a different costume. Because his desires are not completely fulfilled, he slightly gives respect. His face is pale because they consider that he also suffers from separation like them, or he actually has a pale face from separation. Because he walks like an elephant, his earrings touch his cheeks. And the last paragraph is this. Sanatan Goswami writes, he frees the cows of Raja from their distress by letting them meet their calves. This is unlike us, the gopis. Just as the moon rises at the end of the day, and meets the night after separation during the day and is pale because of separation. So Krishna appears at the end of the day, pale from separation, and meets us. The moon is also the lord of the Yadus, since the Yadu dynasty begins with the moon. He causes people's faces to become joyful, mudita vaktraha, since he takes away their sorrow experienced during the day. He takes away suffering experienced during the day for the eyes, gavam, of the living entities in Braja. And that's it for this morning. There's only a few more references, and then we'll go to reviewing the whole chapter by reading Gopal Champu, which is really, really nice. And we're going to be doing the same thing this evening for chapter 11. It's often said that Srimad Bhagavatam is the form of Krishna, the 12 cantos, and the 10th canto, his smiling face. And that means by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, we are associating with Krishna personally. State in reverse order. Krishna gives his personal association to people of this age of Kali through the medium of Srimad Bhagavatam. And the sound vibration says many things in the Bhagavatam, but it relieves the distresses of the living entities that are caught in this material existence, particularly appropriate or beneficial for the persons in this age of Kali, which is an ocean of faults. And by having Krishna's association through Srimad Bhagavatam, and as well, same glorification is given to the chanting of the holy name, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, Param Vijayate. One can make a spiritual connection with Krishna just by sound. The whole of the Vedas is transmitted by sound. You know, that's a nice topic to discuss. Material education or the modes of nature are transmitted by sound. I mean, once the modes of the sound vibration activates this mode, that mode, the other mode, then one becomes captured by that mode. It's that the starting point is sound. Material creation starts with sound. Material creation starts with sound. I mean, that the Bible says it and Sankhya says it. It starts with sound. And sound is carried in ether, a material element. And then spiritual sound is carried by Brahman, by the spiritual medium of transcendence. So by hearing spiritual sound, we're not only contacting Brahman, we're contacting the source of Brahman, or that upon which Brahman rests through spiritual sound. And we heard first evening I was here, this nice verse. The sound vibration of the Vedas is like a desire tree, bancha kalpaturu. But the desire tree, the Vedas are sometimes called, a desire tree. That is to say, a tree that can provide anything. So one can go to Mother Vedas and request anything and get anything through the proper performance of yajna in a proper way and elevation of consciousness and get, you know, whatever you like. But the purpose of the Vedas is not just get what you like. The desire tree of the Vedas is meant to bring one to the position of knowing Krishna. That's the teaching. Vedais desire vairaham eva vedyo. The purpose of the Vedas is to know Krishna. And that which directly discloses Krishna, that's the ripened fruit of that desire tree. And we just happen to be at the right place at the right time and receive Srimad Bhagavatam. That is the ripened fruit. Through sound, the dormant consciousness of Krishna, Krishna consciousness, is awakened through sound, which includes understanding who we are and so forth, in a spiritual sense. Now the tricky part is our contamination. We're quite accustomed to material conceptions and material enjoyment and material idea of what happiness is, and etc. The covering of illusion is very familiar territory, and it's not easy to let go of that very familiar territory into something unknown. I mean, you have to be a little adventuresome to let go of the known and take up something that's unknown. Although someone says, the scripture says, and the teachers and teachings say, it's not foreign. It's your natural condition. It's your natural home. It's your natural everything. This is a disease condition. We're familiar with the diseased condition, but we're habituated to it. So that's the difficulty. Just a little digression on the topic of Vedic cosmology. Because I feel it's important that we understand Vedic cosmology for several reasons, one of them being the TOVP. And people hear about it, and how are we going to explain the TOVP to people that if we don't understand Vedic cosmology? Just say, hey, it's cool. You know, and then what about this and what about that? Because we've all been highly systematically trained up in the material conception of cosmology, of the origin of things, the Big Bang or whatever. And although people say no, but you know, it's, we're all, anyway, then the structure of the universe. And the structure of the universe is not easy to understand. The Vedic model is not easy to understand. So maybe because it's not easy to understand, it's not so important. It's not easy to understand. Let me go to something that's easier to understand. It has such a prominent place in the Bhagavatam. It must be important. And we hear in Canto 2, Chapter 1, in response to the question of Maharaj Parikshit to Shukadeva Goswami, what's the duty of a man who's about to die in the subject matter he should hear, chant, and remember? And the first thing is the universal form. Gosh, read that chapter and can you understand it? Who can understand it? Not easy to understand because of the language and also because it's a transcendental conception. We're not used to it. We're used to the other one. And when we used to the other one, we hear, you know, the transcendental conception, it bounces. It's like, wait a minute. So But there is a transcendental conception of the universal form, and the universal form is Vedic cosmology. It's stated directly in the Bhagavatam. In fifth canto, the very beginning of the very end, it states it explicitly. This is, because the question is, you said some things about, you know, the construction of the universe. Can you elaborate on it? So he says, Sukadeva Goswami says, yeah, this is a description of, a detailed description, somewhat detailed, of the universal form. And he concludes, this is a description of the universal form. So just this morning, I was looking out the window and saw, you know, the Dwadasi moon, just right out that direction. And then over there is the moon, and over there is a really bright star, and then a really dim star. The rest of the stars you couldn't see. So, you know, what is it? Maybe it's not important. You know, just like skip it. But in the words of Sataputta, which is true, the way we see the universe has a profound effect on the way we see ourselves. And if you want to know yourself, what's this place where we are? And you can just, like, leave it. Like, you know, the material conception is whatever it is, or really doesn't matter anyway because we're transcendental beings and I don't need to know what this universe is. But it has this conditioning effect, not only the illusion of Maya, but the conceptions of who we are and the place where we are, what to speak of Krishna. We can't see the soul, although we accept that there is a soul. We can't see Krishna, although we accept that there's Krishna. And we can't see the universal form, Vedic cosmology, because we don't have the capacity. But there's this very elaborate description. And how does it work? Well, it has different conceptions of space and time and so forth. Without going, I mean, there's descriptions that just don't fit. And that's just even this universe, what to speak of the 10th canto Bhagavatam. You know, a mountain that's 80,000 yojanas tall. And so on. And trees that are, you know, there's no such thing. There's no such thing from our, within our experience. So how do you, where's it coming from? Or what, how are we supposed to just skip it and go on to the next canto? That's one thing. But, so I at some point in time, I'm being encouraged to do this and I'm a little inspired to do it. Although it's way over my head, you know, at presently, but I'd like to understand it better and give an understanding, at least according to my capacity to understand. What is this thing? The universe in which we are, in the Vedic picture of the universe in which we are, in Vedic cosmology. And, it fits in with Sankhya, because to understand cosmology, actually Sankhya comes first, and anyway. You need a grasp of Sankhya, which isn't an easy subject, in order to understand cosmology. The terminology and the conceptions go together. But it's where we are. So if we can't understand where we are, how are we going to understand who we are, and how are we going to understand Krishna? So, anyway, and it's right in the Bhagavatam. It's part of the form of Krishna. Not easy to understand for a variety of reasons. So then these activities, as we discussed going back, about a week or two, the scriptural resource that Jiva Goswami and particularly Rupa Goswami relied on, there's a scriptural foundation for the science of rasa. And it has its material dimension and has its spiritual dimension. And they both work, the science of rasa works, how this stimulates that external exhibition. But it reaches its perfection when Krishna is the object. He's the alambana. He's the object. Vishaya within alambana is the ashraya visha, the abode of love and the object of love. Krishna, when he's the object of love, it reaches its culmination. But supposing one doesn't have Krishna as the object, it's your dog or something, your family member. Then there's feelings. But it's not in this ripe stage or mature stage. It's in the mature stage. That's what the purpose of the Vedas is, to know Krishna. The purpose of rasa is to know Krishna. And how does relationship with Krishna work? It's detailed. It's really detailed. You know, it's not easy to follow. If anyone has tried to, it's not easy. The terminology. And after you get familiar with it, it's kind of like anything that's a science, there's terminology and here's a computer. If my computer has a problem, I have to get somebody that knows how to fix it to fix it. Because I don't understand it. I use it, and if it's something, problem comes. So, as people know, some people know computer technology, and some people know the science of music, and some people know how different notes create different moods. They stimulate emotion. That's what these literatures describe. Through culture, the purpose of Vedic culture is to know Krishna and to glorify Krishna. The purpose of drama, the purpose of music, the purpose of literature, the purpose of words, the purpose of sound. The Vedic purpose is to know Krishna. So the purpose of the universe in which we are, and trying to understand it, is to see the connection of everything with Krishna. Because otherwise, if you don't see the connection with Krishna, what's going to happen? You're going to see it separate from Krishna. You see it separate from Krishna, and what's the result? It's not for grabs. I mean, maybe not overtly and maliciously or something, but that's the default position. So how to see everything in relation to Krishna? The Vedas gives us that tool through sound. And it's not easy. It takes some effort. Spiritual life takes effort. It takes effort to try to be a material enjoyer. It takes effort to be a spiritually conscious being. Take a choice. And you got different outcomes. So back to our, this wonderful opportunity. On the one hand, the subject matter is way over our head. And on the other hand, it has the effect of transporting us to another realm, at least for, half hour, 45 minutes. And then it's back to business. You go sit at your computer and go to work and, whatever you got to do at home and do your housework and stuff. Do you just prepare for SATs and have some fun with the guys down the street? We do our thing. That's usually, not with remembrance of Krishna. So how to gradually awaken the remembrance of Krishna is through sound, and how that touches the heart. A lot depends on how eager we are to connect with Krishna. It's not an philosophically intellectual kind of thing, or even a religious kind of thing. The light of mercy and coming to us through sound, and kind of skipped over some of the earlier cantos and went right to the 10th canto. Let's see how it goes. I'm thinking in the evening, after completing chapter 11, which is going to happen soon, go back again to some of the details of chapter 12 and then skip ahead to Uddhava Gita. like Bhagavad Gita 201. It's Uddhava Gita. Let's see. So let's see if there's some discussion. Krishna's returning from the forest to Braja.
Guru Maharaj, I just wanted to say, comment that what you said, you know, when we read and hear about this, even if it is for 45 minutes, an hour, actually it transports to, I was just feeling that today while we were reading that verse about, you know, how Krishna is coming, as if like in the mind, that painting is
happening. In words, there's a painting, and then this is painting through words, and it has, both have one sense, another sense. The more powerful sense is ear. And it can transport one. And then you may want to, anyway, yeah, you may want to express it in a visual way, but it's a visual picture.
Right.
And who can imagine what the experience is of the pure heart to hear these descriptions? Whew. Keep going.
Yes, so, yeah, it was very, just today I was feeling that, so I just wanted to express. The question I had was, the universal form, we hear this universal form, Shukadeva Goswami describing, but yet it is said that it is imaginary. Or is it said that it is material? I'm not sure, but.
There are different ways of understanding it's imaginary. One way, to keep it really simple, because there's other ways than one way, it's temporary. So that table is imaginary because it's temporary. The universe is imaginary because it's temporary. The universal form is imaginary because it's temporary. But it's real. The table is real. The universe is real. The universal form is real, but it's temporary. In that sense, imaginary. Now you see it, now you don't. But it's Krishna's form. It's Krishna's form. So then that's the other side of, it's Krishna's form. It's one of Krishna's forms. But manifest and not manifest, withdrawn.
So,
There's other ways to understand that word imaginary, but that's a beginning.
It is also described, right, like the eyes, the sun and moon are like the eyes of the universal form. Or before describing universal form, he describes about pantheistic idea of, you know, the rivers are like veins and things like that, right? So I was just trying to relate. So the pantheism is like the first step. Do we understand like that?
Well, the two things. There are different descriptions of the universal form. It's one entity. There are different ways of describing that one entity. So what's in the fifth canto is different than what's canto 2, chapter 1. Mm. It's a different perspective on the same entity. Mm. So it makes it our binary processor called the mind has trouble handling a different perspective or conception of the same thing. Is it this or is it that? Mm. So that's part of the difficulty. Now back specifically to your question, it's not exactly pantheism is a beginning. It's a conception, something like what Prabhupada says, even in Aborigine people, they have some idea, some conception of what's higher. A mountain, thunderbolt, a feather. You know, they see something and revere that something. You know, American Indians. Yes. So, it's because it's natural. So that's the pantheism is a conception that everything is God. That's what pantheism is. The tree is God, the mountain is God, the river is God. It's God is within nature. That's pantheism. And then it goes up a little bit, then the controllers of those things. That's another upgrade on the pantheism topic or conception. Commonly pantheism means there's many gods, but more explicitly it's God is within nature. And then there's the controllers of the elements of nature, so that's pantheism. Mm. So there's grades of pantheism. That's the point. And it's a beginning. There's something above me. And so, theism instead of atheism. Mm. And the description of this universal form that you're referring to in Canto 1, specifically two things. It says it's to help the person that doesn't have a conception of God form a conception of God as a person by things they can perceive with their senses. And there's a person. Now it's that for many people, that's a big stretch. Mm. But then the second point is after successfully achieving that behind everything there's a person, it then one is recommended to let go of that conception and move on to the Paramatma conception. That's chapter 2. It's a bridge to get to chapter 2. People just totally worldly. They're not going to go meditate on Paramatma. So it's a step. So does that answer your question?
Yes, ma'am.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. A few questions on the chat here. One from Janardhan Kalwar. If we are in relationship with family of animal.
Family of animals?
Animal.
Family of animals?
And he says family of animal. That's. So I'm assuming it's maybe like a dog or.
If I'm living like a dog, is that what he means?
In relationship.
Does that mean if they have a house pet that's a dog? Is that what he means? Or it means
he has not placed it like that. I'm
okay. Let's carry on. Okay.
If we are in relationship with family of animal and see Krishna in them, is it still misplaced?
Is it
still misplaced seeing Krishna in?
No. Krishna is within. No. There's levels of conception of seeing Krishna within. But it's not misdirected, misplaced conception. It may be not mature, not complete, but it's not wrong. Krishna is within. Krishna is within everything. Animals and trees and mosquitoes. Krishna is within.
The next question is from Archana Vaidya Mataji. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. In Bhagavatam, we see that Vidura's advice to Dhritarashtra is to leave home immediately. Also on Krishna's departure, Pandavas quit home. I was wondering why didn't they stay and engage in service to Krishna until last point of life and felt a necessity of leaving everything?
Well, the circumstances are different for those two. In the case of Dhritarashtra, it was obsessive compulsive attachment. And to get free from that, there was only one choice for him. Break that obsessive compulsive attachment. There wasn't another option for him. And for the Pandavas, quite different. They're attached to Krishna. They're not attached to the temporary. But they wanted to be with Krishna. They wanted to be with Krishna. So they left the temporary to be with Krishna. Now they could have done it this way, that way, the other way. They were inspired to do that way. Because they're part of Krishna's entourage when he performs his worldly pastime. So Krishna went to another place and they went to another place to join him. That's the spiritual conception. And could they have done it differently? Yeah, they could have done differently, as is being suggested. But they wanted to be with Krishna.
So, one more from Rukmavati Mataji, Rukmavati Devadasi. Guru Maharaj, are there any guidelines on how much effort I need to put?
Yeah. It's a very simple one. What's the language? Over-endeavor? And where's the line for over-endeavor, kind of like your question yesterday evening? Over-endeavor. Prabhupada made it really simple. You make a sincere effort. And if the sincere effort moves, the circumstances, fantastic. And if it doesn't, fantastic. So you make a sincere effort. Now, what's a sincere effort as opposed to one that's not? Where's that line? A little bit like Harish's question yesterday evening also. You know, you certainly don't compromise sadhana. And then there's also the affective part of attachment. Is your endeavor filled with attachment, or is your endeavor filled with I want to make this offering to Krishna? And then another dimension is instructions of the spiritual master. Classic example in ISKCON, two of them, was the completing of Chaitanya Charitamrita. Prabhupada gave them Mission Impossible, and they said impossible. And Prabhupada's reply, impossible is a word in a fool's dictionary. So they did Mission Impossible. And they knocked themselves out, literally, day and night, for the period of time, and they completed it. Because that was, in one sense, an over-endeavor. But it was the order of the spiritual master, so it wasn't. Ordinary circumstances, it would definitely be an over-endeavor. They compromised their sleep, they compromised everything. Their families, they compromised everything. One normally doesn't do that. On the order of the spiritual master, they did it, and the period was over, and then there was a recovery period. We accept those things, another way of saying the same, we accept those things that come of their own accord. We make a sincere effort and we accept those things that come of their own accord. And not accepting what comes of its own accord and obsessively continuing to strive for something, that's over-endeavor. Okay? You have something.
Yes, Mother, in relation to that. Because so far, every time I've been hearing about the over-endeavor, I was always thinking on the material side of things. And when you're saying over-endeavor, it's also...
Well, we're devotees. We can also over-endeavor as devotees.
Right. Okay.
Like Harish's question yesterday. Yeah.
So we can over-endeavor, I mean, on the spiritual side also, the over-endeavoring
is you're repeating.
On the spiritual master's instruction.
Well, there's exceptions to every rule.
Okay. And the same thing, that we be satisfied with whatever sincere effort we put and what comes off its own accord.
Yes, that's right.
On the spiritual side as well.
That's right.
Okay.
Now, one who makes sincere effort has the following experience. My capacity increases. Presently, I have such and such capacity, X. And by sincere effort, X becomes X and a half. Capacity. Krishna sees the effort. Krishna reciprocates with the effort. But we don't knock ourselves out, the over-endeavor thing. If Krishna, we have whatever we have. We have resources, we have abilities, we have acumen, etc. We don't over-endeavor. And, you know, if you're a transcendentalist, there's no over-endeavor. There's no constraint. Krishna calling the gopis. They left. There's no over-endeavor. You know, it's spontaneous Braja Prem. There's no over-endeavor. But, you know, back to us, you know, the worldly people, there's an over-endeavor. It's material attachment rather than pleasing Krishna. That's the over-endeavor. So we're mixed devotees. We make some endeavor according to our capacity, and we're satisfied with whatever Krishna provides. And some people have, you know, this, and some people have that. And we're not like looking over to the neighbor and say, they've got more than I have. We're happy with what Krishna provides us. We're making a sincere effort, and, you know, we're not knocking ourselves out. You know, blaming ourselves or compromising sadhana or, you know, judging others and judging ourselves. You don't do that. That's over-endeavor.
Sometimes, Maharaj, I feel in that regard that maybe it's a message from Krishna that I need to really do more.
We can always do more. There's no limit to doing more. But it's your question yesterday. You know, discretionary savings and stuff.
Right.
And so we rely on Krishna. Even when we're doing our endeavors, we can always do more. But we don't do the over-endeavor more. Where it's attachment, the consciousness behind the endeavor is an attachment on the material side, not the attachment to pleasing Krishna. If you can make some endeavor to chant flawlessly, then you'll have a clear idea of where the line goes of over-endeavor or too much attachment.
I'll need some time to...
Okay. It's just your question yesterday coming up again.
Yesterday was a little more on... The question was on trying to balance a material, spiritual kind of...
Yeah.
Thing, but this is on the spiritual side.
Okay. Okay. Anyone else?
Just a couple.
No, we'll just do in the room, and then we'll come back to the online.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Maharaj, the transcendental sound...
Speak right into the mic, thank you.
The transcendental sound, what I was just like thinking is like, every day when I do is like, okay, this is my time for chanting or this is my time for
good.
Hearing.
Good.
And it is done and I put it on side and do other things.
Okay.
But what I was just by hearing other things, again I have to reset myself to do the things again. But what I was just, is my understanding right? Like when I'm doing other things, I just don't put, this is done, but I can have that conception in other things
yes.
also.
Yes.
Because it becomes so tough for me to come back when I just like, it's like for me, closing this door and opening a different door and again to reopen this door, it takes a lot of effort.
Well, you carry it with you. That's the idea.
Okay.
It's not like opening another, go back and open the door again. It's meant, in as bhakti matures, it stays with you.
Okay.
Let's go to Mother Jasoda. Not, you know, you. And then when she's churning butter, or she's cooking, or she's whatever she's doing, her mind is on Krishna. Not like, okay, I spent time with Krishna, and now I'm over here cooking, and over there I'm churning butter. It's the affection and the mindfulness of Krishna is with her always.
Mm-hmm.
So now, we'll go to us. There's blocks of time, that's good. That's mm-hmm. how we should manage our time. And the hearing and chanting activities, the chanting and hearing activities are meant to awaken attachment for Krishna, maya sakta.
Mm-hmm.
To become attached to Krishna so that when you're doing those other things that are in those other blocks of time, your thought is with Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
And the best way to awaken the mindfulness of Krishna is sound,
mm-hmm.
the chanting and the hearing. So that mindfulness of Krishna goes with you, not have to open another door. Now, it doesn't happen, you know, it's not a one or a zero. It's gradual. But that's what's meant by the regular, the regulation of hearing and chanting along with the duties that we do. The same topic as yesterday morning, the Gona Dharma. It's join those worldly activities, this, that, and the other thing, with mindfulness of me, remembrance of me, mind absorbed in me. Mama nusmara yujacha. Always think of me and perform your prescribed duties. Not think of me over there in that chunk of time. Okay, close that door. Now is my duties.
Cultivating
yes.
it to be more.
It's awakening of bhakti
that
flows into everything. And you, so we're just like here we are, and I've said this several times, we're with Krishna, and then the class is over and we go and do our duties, and the door closes. Sitting at your computer, you're not thinking of, you know, you're thinking of what you got to do at work, or what you got to do in the kitchen, or what you got to do with your SAT studies, and you're not thinking of Krishna.
Yeah.
But as bhakti matures, it stays with you.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, let's take somebody that really likes kirtan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see their finger going like this, or that, you know, very softly they're murmuring the mantra. They're singing as they're going about, because it's with them. The mindfulness of Krishna goes with you when it's awakened. Okay.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj. I have a question about the strength we gain from, you know, the different services apart from chanting. The different services we do for Krishna, like I'm more inclined serving like more physically, like
mostly what?
Physically, like
okay.
cooking.
Fine.
Or you know, things like that. But I feel that when I'm not doing it for some days, I fall down or, you know, something like that.
You're not doing what for some reason?
Like any physical service
things.
For
okay.
Krishna.
Okay.
So, you know, I just wanted to know, while cooking I hear, but I'm more inclined to these things. So, you know, how can I just wanted to know, can we gain strength?
Yes.
Okay.
You have, each of us have our nature.
Uh-huh. Yeah, my name, yeah. Right.
And, you know, in the car ride on the way to the program last night, I was making some suggestions of how people in this community
mm-hmm.
that aren't so inclined
mm-hmm.
might be inclined
mm-hmm.
at doing something they like to do. Mm-hmm. So this is just one suggestion. I don't want to like take too many times because there may be 500 other suggestions. Mm-hmm. But arrange a food for life gathering in their homes or in this home, depending upon whether they're vegetarian in their home, and get them together to do some service. Now, they're saying to her, I'm busy, you know, I'm attracted, but I don't have time. Okay. Then they'll find time for something they like to do. Mm-hmm. They just don't like to do this. So find something they like to do. Okay. And do it together. And then through that association, then something. Mm-hmm. So some people come to our temples. Mm-hmm. They're not sadhakas. Mm-hmm. They just like to do some service. They like serving prasadam. They like washing pots. Right. These like business people that, you know, mm-hmm. big salaries, and their favorite activity all week is going to the kitchen and washing pots. I've met many of them and like, wow. Mm-hmm. I didn't say that to them, but that was, mm-hmm. it's encouraged by the temple, not just because they want to get the pots washed. Mm-hmm. They want people to do things that they can relate to, mm-hmm. the physical things or whatever the things, mm-hmm. and then give them some service that's practical. Yes. So that's purifying too. So you have your nature, back to you. Mm-hmm. You know, do your nature. And supposing your nature is, well, I'm not so inclined to chanting. There are lots of people in that category. Then we chant anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because we know by scripture, it's purifying and it's essential to my growing in spiritual life. So I chant, but I'm more attracted to the physical. So mm-hmm. that's your nature. That's fine. You do it. Give energy to it and try to carry mindfulness of Krishna with you mm-hmm. into those activities that are physical that suit your nature. Okay. You do it for Krishna consciousness.
Mm-hmm. So my bhakti will...
It's karma yoga. Uh-huh. Yad karoshi yadasnasi, mm-hmm. you know the verse. Whatever you do, you do it for Krishna. Mm-hmm. That's karma yoga. It's not bhakti.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You're offering the result to Krishna. This is my nature. Mm-hmm. I'm offering it to Krishna. Please mm-hmm. accept. Okay. And then bhakti is, it goes more to the heart level. Your life is just pleasing Krishna. Mm. Whether it's something you're inclined to do or not inclined to do. Huh. You're from the heart level, you're Krishna's.
Okay. Yes, Mata.
It grows. But, you know, karma yoga is a subset of bhakti. It's mm-hmm. it's bhakti yogis do what karma yogis do, plus. And karma yogis don't do what bhakti yogis do. Okay. In fullness. Okay. They do what they like to do and they offer the result to Krishna.
Okay.
So, that's, you know, it's part of the bhakti process.
Mm-hmm.
And then what takes it further is the hearing and chanting activity.
Okay.
Just like we're doing right now, just like this conversation mm-hmm. part of what we're doing. So then you carry that with you into your this week mm-hmm. and how you're going to, your weekend and how you're going to take care of stuff.
Okay. Yes, Mara. Yes, Mara.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Online? Huh? Yeah, you got the microphone.
This is from Subramataji. Guru Maharaj, as you were describing Kalpataru tree, we also hear Vaishnava as Kalpataru. Does it imply that outcome we get out of our association with Vaishnava is dependent upon or checked by what are we desiring out of that association?
Yeah, sure. Please give your blessings, Swamiji, so that my daughter can do well in her exams. And she finds a nice husband. Swamiji, please give your blessings. It depends. Keep going.
This is from Pooja Singh. Did Krishna ever exhibit signs of separation from the Rajrasis after he left?
Signs of separation. From the Vrijbasis?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely.
After he left?
After he left Vrindavan. Oh, yeah. Okay. Oh, yeah. Like, there was no delay. It was always there.
Okay. So the other part of the question, just like the change of color in his face we heard about today. Kind of.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Yes.
And the other is from Rajat Kumar. Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Dandavat Pranam. How to understand a situation as a reciprocation of Krishna or trick or talk of our own mind? Thank you.
Well, we're mixed devotees. My standard answer for this is there's probably a mix. We're devotees, and Krishna reciprocates with his devotees. Even the mixed devotees, he reciprocates with us. And how we're perceiving how he's reciprocating with us is filtered through the mind that's, you know, not pure. So our experience is going to be a mixed experience. But Krishna's not absent because we're mixed devotee. He's there. When you read the questions, skip the part, thank Guru Maharaj for a nice class and all that stuff.
Okay.
Just leave that out.
So this next question is from Anjum Biswas. This is actually from question from Vishakha. Why are we not God?
Why are we not?
God.
Because we're not. Because there's somebody who already is. And we're his part and parcel. And that's who we are, and he's who he is. Okay. That's it?
Yes. I had one question.
Okay.
But as you mentioned that when Krishna plays his flute, the souls who are in the Santaras, they get the ecstasies of the other rasas.
Not exactly. I didn't say that.
Okay.
Maybe what I said was, You can go back and hear the recordings or read the commentary, but it says in the spiritual world, everyone has a relationship with Krishna. The inanimate objects are understood to have shanta rasa, neutrality, and when Krishna comes before them, that shanta rasa becomes stimulated in an ecstatic mood. Not that they change their rasa. If I said like that, then I misspoke. They don't change their rasa. They just experience an ecstasy that normally they're not experiencing. And they mentioned, for example, is the cloud renders service. That's above shanta, that's dasya. The cloud hovers above Krishna's head to make shade in the heat of the sun. The cloud makes a rumbling sound, exhibiting ecstasy, but is very careful not to override Krishna's flute sound. So that's a dasya mood. But it's arising out of an ecstasy. So I don't, it's not that the cloud shifts from shanta to dasya. And then, you know, they render some service. It's in an ecstatic, state. Does that answer?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Srila Prabhupada ki. Yes.